Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1939. The makers of Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment brought to you by the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood. With Fanny Bryce and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Melissa Corges, and tonight's special guests, Walter Pidgeon, Virginia Bruce, and Leo Carrillo. And here is your host for the evening, Robert Young.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Warren Hull has just given you the names of our guests tonight, so you can see we're going to have a pretty full schedule. In addition, don't forget that this evening will mark the debut of the Good News Jitterbug Trio. I've been rehearsing all day with Frank Morgan and Meredith Wilson, so I probably won't forget it very soon. But we'll come to that later. Right now, Meredith is going to open the program with a tune that's been popular ever since it was first introduced on Broadway 10 years ago, Fine and Dandy. On the Great Divide, 8 o'clock, way out in Iowa, 9 o'clock, back on the gay white way. Soon you'll hear Frank and Fanny, the gorgeous Corges, and Wilson too. With you folks handy, it's fine and dandy. So audience, we're serenading you. Fine and Dandy, played by Meredith Wilson and the orchestra.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet one of the grandest actors on the Metro lot or any other lot. And a nice fellow besides, which is a combination you don't run into every day, believe it or not. He's at home in Hollywood and also on Broadway. But California is his home, and he's the leading member of one of California's first families, Leo Carrillo.
Thank you, Bob. Now I think it'd be nice if you would say something about society lawyer.
Always glad to oblige a guest, Leo. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Carrillo's latest picture, Society Lawyer, starring Walter Pidgeon and Virginia Bruce, with Mr. Carrillo as the nicest gangster who has reached the screen in many a moon.
Hey, that's beautiful, Bob. Thank you.
Well, you can do something for me now. Remember that party at your ranch one night? You gave an impression of an Italian in a telephone booth?
Well, that, say, listen, I've done that at hundreds of parties.
All right, I want you to do it for us right now.
All right, Bob, I'll be delighted. Here. This happened, by the way, as I was coming through the Pennsylvania station last summer. There was a little Italian in a telephone booth, and it was a very hot day, and he lost his best friend, so he was calling up the public morgue. He couldn't find the friend anyplace. There he was. He just finished an Italian dinner, and he could have been arrested for flagrancy at that time, of eating garlic and everything. But anyhow, he was in there. He'd never used a dial on a telephone before, and it was very hot. He dropped a nickel in the slot. He couldn't make sense to understand, and he was calling the morgue to see if they hadn't picked up this friend that he'd lost, and this is the conversation that I heard. Hey, Centrale. Centrale, push him up a number, please. The nickel has gone downstairs. I push him in the slop. I'm Italian, fellow. Yes, Napolitan. Dalla base, eh? I'm in the boot. Hurry up, please. Give me the number. I'm hot. I'm in the boot. No, I say I'm hot in the boot. No, I'm hot in the telephone boot. I said the nickel, what, the dialy, what do you mean, oh, the little wheel on the telephone? They got one, it's no good, it's full of holes. No, I put my finger in the hole, I can't pull them out, I don't touch them all. Anyhow, the little dialy, the wheel is broke, every time I push him over, he come back every time, I don't want to touch him, huh? But number one is spettomomento, I got to make it on a piece of paper, yeah? Give me Calamadun. Non capito come si chiama americana questa cosa. Give me Calamadon tree two times around with the head. No, two times around, look like a little donut. I don't know what they call it in English. Cosa piccolino come questo? Come napoletano? Peperone. Yeah, sure, I'm Italian, Polo. I know, you Irish people. Irish people are making trouble. That's all right. It's good. I said nothing about that. They don't call me wax, they rumble a patch of the little bit of dark. Say, operation. If you don't want to talk to me, give me inflammation. Hello, that's you, inflammation? Inflammation, I want you to do me the flavor quick. I want you to look at your telephone books and give me the number for the mortgage. No, I want the mortgage. The place where everybody lives is dead. Hurry up, please. I'm hot in the boots. Hello, that's you, Mr. Mortgage? Say, Mr. Mortgage, my friend, Tony, get off of the wire, please, operation. Hello, get off of the, hello. Sacramento, porque me ayer into the Italian America. I say, oh, hey, operation, I was talking with a gentleman and you cut him up. No, you cut him up, push him back where he was standing before. I don't know. I can't tell where the people is to go. I can't see the man come. Hello, get out of the way, they're coming now. Hello? I'm sorry, the operation cut you up. I can't hear. Stand up on your phone, please. Well, jiggle up your hook a little bit. I say, jiggle up your hook a little bit. I jiggle up mine. Jiggle up yours, too. What's the matter? Say, Mr. Mortgage. Mr. Mortgage, my friend, that's better now. I can hear myself pretty good. Mr. Mortgage, my friend, Tony Lazzaroni, I can't find him in no place, so I want you, please, go look your icebox. Yeah, see, we got one little Italian fellow over there in the icebox about 4 feet and 12 inches high. Sure, little fellow. Sure, he got a two legs. Last time I see him, he got a two legs. Last time I see him, he was wearing a blue suitsy. No, wearing a blue suitsy. Porca miseria, testa dura, animale, non capisce niente. Hello! Last time I see him, he was wearing a blue suitsy. S-O, double T. Non capisce come si chiama americano per te. Hello! Hurry up. I'm a hot. I'm a die. I'm a hot. I'm in the boots. What? You don't got him in your icebox? Hey, that's funny. I pushed him in the river 2 weeks ago. Maybe he'll come up yet.
Well, that was marvelous, Leo.
Thank you, Bob. Now I'll take your job away from me for a minute.
Why, what do you mean?
I take your job away. Ladies and gentlemen, I speak to you now as a Californian. Yesterday, your master of ceremonies, Mr. Robert Young, Bob, standing in front of me, was unanimously elected honorary mayor of the community in which he has his new ranch, the town of Tarzana, California. And as native son number one of this great state,
I congratulate the town of Tarzana, and Bobby, I congratulate you.
Thank you, Leo. I think it's a real honor, and I'm going to work hard to deserve it. And now, Meredith, I want you to play for that lovely, glamorous star of the Great Waltz, Melissa Gorgeous, who will sing one of the grand melodies of all time, Just a Little Love, a Little Kiss. That was beautiful, Melissa. I can scarcely remember
right,
that I've enjoyed
it more. All right, now, right out here. Get your camera set
hey,
up.
What's
we
going
can't
on
waste
here?
Too much time. Now, Melissa, if you'll...
Hey, Frank, what's going on here?
What's the idea
of bringing cameramen to the broadcast?
Well, it's for the fan magazines. They want a few pictures. Now, Melissa, darling, you just stand right here beside me.
Like
what?
Like this?
Oh, like this? I love it.
We're all set, Mr. Morgan.
Yes.
Just
hold
it. Wait a minute. Can I get in this picture, Frank?
Oh, yes. Well, I'll try to fix it. Say, boys, you don't want him in the picture, do you?
Don't put yourself out, Frank.
Oh, not at all. Oh, now, don't move, dear. Do you want him, fellas?
Well, who is he?
Who am I? I'm the mayor of Tarzana.
Oh, well, we'll get you later, Mr. Weissmuller. lady, over there a little closer, please, will you?
No.
Oh, yes. How's this, boy?
That's perfect. Thank you very much. We'll get this in the mail tonight. Now, what about the caption?
The caption.
Yes, how do you spell Mrs. Morgan's first name?
Mrs. Morgan?
Oh.
This is Melissa Corgis.
Yes, of course. Just over you don't put Frank Morgan and friends. Oh. Well, goodbye, fellas.
What's going on here?
No more pictures, Frankie?
No, I'm afraid that's all for now, dear. We'll take some more tomorrow at the airport.
Airport? What are you doing, eloping?
No. We're simply going for a spin in my new low-wing amphibian. Aren't we, Melissa?
I'm afraid so.
Oh. Why, you're not nervous, are you?
Not with my handsome sky boy. Goodbye, Frank.
Oh. What a... It's a lovely creature. Well, I better...
Now, wait a minute.
What?
Sky boy.
Oh.
What's all this about amphibian? Some more of your amphibian?
Young, you're quite a witty fellow in a laborious sort of a way. Oh. What is it that every time I make an innocent remark, you take it upon yourself to accuse me of distorting the truth?
Why, Frank, I never accused you of telling the truth.
Well, that's different. I don't like the way that came out. But... Explain yourself, Young.
Well, you told me you're a doctor, a lawyer, a tree surgeon, and I'm tired of the whole thing.
Well, never mind the generalities, Young. Just stick to the present lie.
Oh. Frank, does Melissa really think you're going to take her up in an airplane tomorrow?
Of course. I spent 2 hours this morning fitting her with a parachute.
Frank.
Well,
can you operate a plane?
They don't call me Ace Morgan for nothing. Veteran of the Lafayette Escadrille, charter member of the Caterpillar Club, and the loudest of the quiet birdmen. You're looking at the last of a long line of distinguished liars. I mean, flyers.
Frank, last week you told me all your ancestors were tree surgeons.
Well, that was the shady branch of the family. But my Uncle Churn was one of aviation's real pioneers. He was professor of chemistry at Hotfoot High School. Uncle Churn made the first balloon flight in his part of the state, filling the bag by an entirely new process, and was awarded a medal.
What made the balloon go up, Frank?
Hot air.
What's keeping you down?
Young, someday you'll go too far, but not far enough to suit me.
No.
My Uncle Churn was not satisfied with his hot air method of flying, and he decided to invent a cheap new gas. He began a series of experiments which cost a fortune, but he was not discouraged. Then one afternoon, when my Aunt Trellis was taking his lunch out to the laboratory, she heard a terrific explosion. She dashed into the room and found the walls covered with tiny spots.
Were those spots the result of your uncle's experiment?
No, those spots were my uncle. After that, it was up to me to carry on the family tradition.
Oh, this is the part I like.
Yes.
Well, how did you learn to fly, Frank?
Well, I took lessons from a beautiful female instructor in an old-fashioned biplane.
Jenny?
No, her name was Alice. I was an apt pupil, and in no time at all, we were doing immermoons, loops, wing-overs, barrel rolls, every trick known to the advanced flyer.
Did you learn how to come out of a dive?
I always knew a back way if a cop... Oh, you mean a... a power dive. Well, when I began barnstorming, that was my greatest trick.
Oh, a stuntman now.
The best. At a state fair one year, I introduced a trick that made aviation history. A gentleman's pocket watch was placed on the ground in the middle of the field, and I was to dive from a height of 20,000 feet, full power, the idea being to crack the crystal of the watch with the left wheel of the plane.
That's a clever stunt.
I climbed up above the field, checked my altimeter at 20,000 feet, and went into my dive. I hurtled toward the earth at comet speed, shooting toward my target like a bullet. I saw the watch growing bigger and bigger, closer and closer. And just at the critical second, I pulled my stick to level off.
Did you smash the crystal?
And the watch and the plane. I spent 3 months in the hospital. But when I got out, I acquired the finest ship that money could buy, and then I had my great adventure.
What was it, Frank?
Well, I was taking a trial cruise in my new plane, and everything was perfect. But suddenly, a bad storm came up, and I was about to head for home when my radio brought in the unmistakable bzzz of the SOS.
Somebody was in trouble.
Bad trouble.
Oh.
A lonely trapper, snowbound in his cabin in the high Sierras, had come down with appendicitis and needed the attention of a surgeon. So
So I determined to push through the storm and bring the fellow out, figuring I had just about enough gas left in my tank.
Your what?
Tank.
You're welcome.
I tried to get above the storm, but it was impossible because ice was beginning to form on the wings, holding my ceiling at about 16,000 feet. But I was going well enough until suddenly my keen ear realized that my left motor was playing pranks.
What?
Pranks.
You're welcome.
I was afraid my oil line was clogged, and I watched the instrument board like foam. I was losing altitude rapidly. The ratio was dropping on my intake manifold, my fuel was running low, and to make matters worse, my left motor suddenly died completely.
Why didn't you turn back, Frank?
I couldn't. I was considering it, but just then the trapper's anguished voice cut through again on my radio. I still hear it in my dreams. Calling 10Q. 10Q.
Calling what?
10Q.
You're welcome.
Don't be so darn polite.
Never mind him, Frank. Tell me what happened.
Well, I saw it was impossible to beat the storm with only one motor, so I set my robot controls and climbed out on the left wing to fix the ailing motor. The storm was bouncing the ship like a cork on the ocean, and I was barely able to hang on to the wing while I blew out the oil line, mixed up the valve caps, and screwed up the works. My hand was frozen to the wrench, but once more the motor was running like a top.
Then you crawled back to the cabin, huh?
I didn't have a chance. While I was working on the wing, the ship fell off. It seemed like hours before I got to the trapper's cabin and saved his life.
Wait a minute, wait a
yes,
minute.
Yes, I...
You flew there on a wing?
Yes, it took a pretty piece
Frank.
Of... going. What?
Did you ever hear of the law of gravity?
The law of gravity... Oh, yes. Well, this happened before the law was passed.
Friends, did you ever have trouble getting a really good cup of coffee? Has this sort of thing ever happened in your home?
Mabel, what in the world is the matter with this coffee? It looks all right, but it has absolutely no taste at all. It's just like so much hot water.
Well, Jim, I don't understand it.
Did you put in enough coffee?
Of course, I put in more than enough. You've complained so often, I wanted to give you a really good cup tonight.
Well, Mabel, if you put in plenty of coffee, this ought to have a good, rich flavor. Can't you find out what's wrong with our coffee?
Now, friend, I want to tell you something this wife didn't know. You see, it's air that steals away coffee flavors. All coffee, whether ground or in the whole bean, starts to lose flavor as soon as it's roasted, if exposed to the air. In fact, ground coffee, packed in ordinary containers where air can get at it, loses as much as 45%, nearly half of the precious flavor you've paid for, in only 9 days. Well, that's why we take Maxwell House coffee, still fresh and fragrant from the roasting oven, and pack it in that familiar blue super vacuum can, from which all air is first removed. Then the can is sealed under vacuum. This way, no air can get in, so none of that rich coffee flavor can get out. And so the new Maxwell House comes right into your kitchen with all its delicious coffee flavor and goodness sealed in, none wasted. So friends, if you've had trouble getting a really good cup of coffee, try a pound of the new Maxwell House tomorrow. You'll find it now so much richer, more delicious, more satisfying than ever before. And with Maxwell House, you're sure of full flavor, full coffee goodness in every pound you buy. For you're sure of getting coffee that's not days fresh, but roaster fresh. And no coffee can be fresher than that.
Every once in a while, a new tune appears in the melody marks that's so good everybody in the music business knows right away it's going to be a real hit. We've got a new one of these naturals for you tonight, which Meredith will present now to the Maxwell House Good News Chorus. It's called The Moon is a Silver Dollar. Thank you.
father to share. And with you in my arms, I'm a millionaire. Our cares and troubles are only small change. Someday they'll all change into a dream.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here is Fanny Bryce as Baby Snook. Well, spring is really here, and Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, is hard at work in his backyard engaged in his favorite hobby, gardening.
Listen.
Tiptoe through the tulips, Ah, look at those magnificent green shoots. Plenty of lettuce soon. Yes, sir.
Hello, Daddy.
Oh, hello, Snow. I thought you were playing inside with your little friends.
I am, Daddy. We're playing house.
Well, that's fine. Now, don't step on those vines, darling. Yeah. Who are you playing with?
Tommy's the father, and Betty is the mother, and I'm the baby.
Well, what are you doing out here?
I ain't born yet.
Oh. Well, go in and get born so I can finish transplanting these tomatoes.
I don't want to play with Tony, Daddy.
Oh, why not?
Because he tells everybody I'm dumb.
Oh, you forget it. He just doesn't know any better.
Tony's dumber than me, Daddy.
You mean dumber than I?
He's dumber than both of us.
I was just correcting your atrocious English. Now, hand me that ring.
Here, Daddy. What are you doing?
Oh, I have to turn the topsoil and give the plants some room. They'll grow better.
Why are you doing it, Daddy?
Because I love it. Yes, sir, I'm proud of my little truck garden.
Is that what it is?
Uh-huh. There.
When will it grow?
In a few weeks.
Then can I ride on it?
On what?
The truck.
Oh, Snooks, I'm not raising trucks. Just small vegetables.
Why?
For my own amusement.
Is it funny?
No, it's not funny. Run along into the house now. Let me get through.
I want to help you, Daddy.
Snooks, I don't need any help.
I won't be much help, Daddy.
Oh, all right. Spray the roses with this stuff while I cut off the dead stalks.
All right, Daddy.
Just look how beautiful these flowers are when they're in bloom. Ah, spring. I could jump for joy.
Do you feel all right, Daddy?
I feel wonderful. I just love this time of the year. It makes my whole being tingle with a strange sensation.
Does it?
A wild desire to commune with nature. I can't get rid of this itching, burning feeling.
Why don't you take off your long underwear, Daddy?
Oh, don't be silly, Snooks. It's something deeper. Something inside of me that doesn't let me rest.
Did you eat too much dinner?
Now go away before you spoil my whole day. Give me that spray gun.
Why?
Because you're getting it all over your dress. Now go inside.
Oh, what's those onions for, Daddy?
They're not onions. They're bulbs.
Light them.
They're not light bulbs. They're plant bulbs.
Well, how do you make them light?
They don't light. Did you ever see a plant growing with lights on it?
Uh-huh.
Oh, you did? Where?
On a Christmas tree.
Those bulbs don't grow there. We put them there.
Why?
Oh, just for decoration. Look out, I have to prune this bush.
Daddy.
What is it?
Did you put the lights on the Christmas tree?
Yes.
And did you put the presents under the tree?
Yes.
Do your lady eat eggs, too?
No, I don't lay any Easter eggs. Look, be a good child and go back in the house with the other children.
Oh, look, Daddy. Oh,
what's the matter?
There's a big bee. Now
just stand still and he won't bother you.
Ain't you afraid of the bees, Daddy?
No.
Is you afraid of snakes?
No, I'm not afraid of snakes.
Is you afraid of tigers?
I'm not afraid of anything in the whole world.
Except Mommy.
Yes. No. Why do you have to bring that up now? Go into the house before I get angry.
I want to stay here.
Oh, can't I get a minute to myself in this place? Stop playing with that hose. Look, you're squirting water all over me.
Duck, Daddy.
Give me that. There. Now get inside, quick.
You won't let me stay here? Oh.
You'll what?
I'll go out and catch the measles.
Well, go ahead. Give them to your mother, too. Maybe I'll get some peace.
Huh?
Oh, nothing. Now, look, you've got the whole place full of mud.
I want to make mud pies.
Oh, don't play with mud.
Why?
Because if you play with mud, it'll give you large, ugly hands.
Will it?
Yes.
If I walk in the mud, will it give me big feet?
Yes.
Daddy.
What is it?
Did Uncle Louie ever sit in the mud?
That's none of your business. Now, you just be careful with those seeds. I have to show them.
With a needle?
Yes, with a needle.
Why?
Because they're bachelor buttons. Funny, isn't it?
Yeah. You sure you feel all right?
Yes, I feel fine. Now move away. I'm going to plant them in rows. They'll soon grow into pretty flowers.
Do people grow out of the ground, Daddy?
I guess so.
Who dug up the first one?
Nobody. Go in and play with your dolls.
Can I have a real-life baby to play with, Daddy?
No, let me get these seeds planted.
If I plant a seed, would a real old baby grow out of the ground?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, sure it will. Look, here, take this seed and go and plant it way over there.
All right. Will it be my own baby for peace?
Yes. Now maybe I'll get a chance to finish up. This top looks kind of droopy.
Daddy.
Yes?
I planted the seed.
Good. Now go in the house.
No, I want to watch the baby grow.
Oh, don't be silly. It takes a few weeks.
Why?
Because it does. And don't ask me any more questions.
Look at Daddy.
Now what is it?
It's growing already.
Where?
Right there where I planted the seed.
No, that's a worm.
Oh. Daddy.
Yes?
Do you know something?
What?
If it wasn't my own child, I'd step on it.
Warren, it seems to me that I remember a very nice old custom you have on this Good News program. Isn't it time for a little of your friendly hospitality?
Yes, Leo. It's coffee time again at Maxwell House. And friends, we invite you all, wherever you may be across the country, to join us in this famous Thursday evening custom. A moment's relaxation over a steaming, fragrant cup of the new Maxwell House coffee. Pull up your chairs and have your coffee with us. Here's your cup, Leo.
Thanks.
And friends, yours and yours. Sugar, cream. And now, Meredith, pour out the music.
Pause briefly for station identification. KFI, Los Angeles.
This is Warren Hull telling you that we are continuing our Good News Maxwell House program with Walter Pidgeon, Virginia Bruce, Leo Carrillo, and the regular Good News cast. And we start the second half of our show with the Good News Jitterbug Trio. Frank Morgan, Meredith Wilson, and Bob Young. These kids are about to bring you their impression of the talented Andrews sisters singing their lunatic swing tune, Hold Tight. And anything might happen, it's your own fault for listening. Here they come with curly blonde wigs, so hold tight.
Broadway through Cincinnati, don't get icky with the 1, 2, 3. Life is just so fine on the solid side of the line. So hold tight, hold tight, hold tight, hold tight. Ride your sassy one for seafood, mama. Shrimp and rice, but every night. Hold tight, hold tight. Hold tight, hold tight, right as tacky wants the seafood, mama. Steamers and rice, and every night. I like oysters, lobsters too, and I like my tasty butter fish. Boom! When I come home late at night, I get my favorite fish. Fish, hold tight, hold tight. Hold tight, hold tight. Frankasaki wants the seafood, mama. Shrimp and rice, the very nice. La 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 la. Frankasaki wants some seafood, mama. Shrimp and rice, they're always very nice.
From the ridiculous to the sublime, we present the MGM Theater of the Air. Our guest stars tonight are Walter Pidgeon and Virginia Bruce. We present them in a drama written especially for this program by Milton Geiger entitled Moral Victory. Mr. Pidgeon plays Brett Porter, district attorney of a large city. Miss Bruce plays Lola Winters, his fiancée. All names used are fictitious. The scene is Brett Porter's office in the city hall. Porter is alone, and he paces nervously about the room. Suddenly, the telephone on his desk buzzes.
Yes, Miss James?
Miss Lola Winters to see you, Mr. Porter.
Send her in, please. Wait. Will you have Detectives Bradley and Ryan bring in the prisoner? Ring me when they get here. Have you got that?
Yes, Mr. Porter.
All right. Send in Miss Winters, please.
Hello, Brett.
Hello, Lola, darling. How are you?
What's it worth to the big district attorney to find out? I'll let you take me to luncheon. Brett, is anything the matter?
Oh, no, nothing wrong. Nothing.
Oh, come on, take an hour's vacation. Come to lunch with me.
I'm sorry, darling. It's rude, I know, but I'm not hungry.
Brett, you sent for me. Is there something wrong?
Sit down, will you, Lola?
Thank you. Brett, you're not yourself. What's the matter, darling?
The fact is, I'm up against a very serious problem, and frankly, I wish I were through with the whole miserable business.
Is it that bad, Brett?
It's bad, all right.
Brett, you know, you mustn't let any personal considerations interfere with the performance of your duty.
I don't know what you mean.
Well, I mean, if there was someone you cared for very much, someone you had to hurt terribly because it was your sworn duty to, you...
Darling, it's never anyone's duty to inflict pain.
But I say, if there were such a person and you had your duty, Well, I'm sure that person would be very proud because you saw the way and did what you...
Lola, you never liked Haskell Beecher, did you?
Haskell Beecher? No.
Well, he was murdered last night.
What? Oh, no.
I'd consider you a most unnatural and, milk-and-toast sort of woman if you didn't despise him for what he did to your father. However...
Oh, Brett, please come to the point quickly.
I need your help to convict the person who killed Haskell Beecher.
What do you want me to do?
Tell me who killed him.
Oh, Brett, you can't ask me that.
But I am.
Oh, I can't answer you.
You know who killed him.
Oh, I don't, Brett.
I wanted to handle this thing in my own way. And, I didn't let them arrest you.
Arrest me?
Yes. You were near the scene of the killing last night.
No, I wasn't.
I'm sorry, darling, you were seen.
You think I did it, don't you? You do, don't you?
I'm only saying that reliable witnesses have placed you on Haskell Beecher's doorstep shortly after the murder. In fact, we're convinced that the killer must have passed you in the hallway and that you must have seen him clearly. We have a suspect in custody. If he's guilty, he ought to pay for his crime. Unless you give the testimony which you are able to give, a murderer, an enemy of the people, may escape justice.
I can't tell you anything.
You did see him, though.
Oh, you don't know what you're asking.
Lola, will you identify that man for us?
No. Oh, please, Brett, don't make me do it.
Darling, believe me, it's always a bitter business trying a man for his life. I've never liked it, and now more than ever before, I hate this job I've got. I don't want to do this. It's hard, but I must.
Oh, yes. Honest Brett Porter, without fear and without reproach. The guardian of law and order, self-made man. Well, how do you like your handiwork?
That isn't like you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Brett. But you mustn't make me talk. You mustn't insist. I warn you, you'll be sorry.
I didn't expect a happy time of it.
Well, if you love me, Brett, don't go on with this, because I won't tell you anything, and then everything will be over between us.
That's quite final?
Yes. Final.
I see. Well, thank you for dropping in, Lola.
Oh, Brett, you say that so strangely.
Do I? Perhaps I'm not the heartless legal machine you think I am. Perhaps I'm giving as much as I'm asking you to give. Perhaps more.
Well, the trouble with you is you become so hard, you couldn't understand.
I think I could.
No, it's just the job. It's routine. Another conviction, another prison term, another electrocution, perhaps...
Stop!
Another...
If he's guilty, he must pay the penalty. I'm sorry about your attitude. You may go.
Oh, darling.
We couldn't go on after this. I couldn't ever stop thinking that you shielded a criminal from the punishment he deserves. I do have a heart, Lola, and I have a social conscience. I'm just fool enough to believe that my duty to honor society is greater than any devotion I might show toward, any single person. That's all, I think.
Oh, Brett, you mustn't do this to us.
I didn't want to do it, but it's done.
Very well. I can't tell you who killed Haskell Beecher because I was on my way over to kill him myself. There, now are you satisfied?
I'm not, because that doesn't solve anything and it doesn't justify your silence.
Oh, but can't you understand? I wanted to kill him myself. The fact that I turned back at the last moment, the fact that someone anticipated me, those things don't matter. My own hands aren't clean. How can I condemn a man for the crime I might have committed myself? Don't you see now? Don't you understand now?
It's a curiously twisted point of view. I'm sorry that I can't honor it.
Brett, am I so blameless in the sight of God that I should sit in judgment on a man hardly guiltier than I am?
Lola, darling, man's greatest offense against man and against God has been committed. And you rationalize. You make excuses for your refusal to testify against him. Without your testimony, we couldn't prove the man guilty to my own complete satisfaction. It's not enough for us to convince a jury. I want to be sure a man is guilty before... Excuse me. Yes?
Detectives Bradley and Ryan are here, Mr. Porter.
Oh. Tell them never mind. No, wait. Just a minute. The prisoner's outside, Lola.
Outside? Oh, I don't know what to... Send him in.
Send them in, Miss James. Thank you, darling. Oh, good morning, men.
Morning, Chief. We've brought your man.
Yes, thank you. Now, Lola, Miss Winters, if you look directly at the prisoner, please.
All right. I've looked.
That's all, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay, Chief. Go on, kid.
Well, is that the man you saw leaving Beecher's?
He's not the man, Brett.
Lola, are you sure?
He's not the man. I'll take my oath on it.
Oh, Lola, thank God. Thank God.
But Brett.
Oh, I'm all right now. It's all right.
Brett, you know that man, don't you?
Well, why shouldn't I? He's my brother, darling.
Your brother? Oh, I understand now, darling. Forgive me.
Forgive you? Of course, darling. And let's go out and get some lunch. I'm hungry.
A very, very small young lady would be honored to have luncheon with a very great man.
Walton, Virginia, that was a grand performance. Evidently, any part with law in it is a natural for Walter Pidgeon. And anything with love in it is a natural for Virginia Bruce. I'm sure you'll all agree when you see them together in their new MGM picture, Society Lawyer, with Leo Carrillo and Eduardo Cianelli. Now, Melissa Gorgeous again, and this time she's going to sing Mozart's Turkish March. Here's a little bit of news that's going to tickle you, Warren Howell. Did you know that in Arabia, a woman may divorce her husband if he fails to keep her well supplied with coffee?
Now, just a minute, Bob. I know more about coffee than Hull. I can go you one better than that. The other day, a sweet young thing, she was a very famous and important actress, told me that her husband said he would divorce her, positively divorce her, if she ever failed to serve him Maxwell House coffee.
Well.
Yes, he said Maxwell House was positively the only coffee he could depend on, and he wasn't going to waste his life drinking poor coffee. Why, you know, Bob, the flavor of Maxwell House is like exotic wines from the Orient. Its richness floats upward, heavenwards, like incense to the gods. Its delicate bouquet.
Hey, Frank. Easy. take it easy. That's beautiful, but we like to stick to facts. Now, listen to this. Friends, it is a fact that today more and more people all over this country are changing to Maxwell House. Ever since it was created more than 50 years ago, we have never ceased our efforts to make Maxwell House the finest coffee you ever tasted. And now, today,
Maxwell House coffee has been still more marvelously improved. Not only have we found a way to make this new blend even richer, more delicious, more downright satisfying than ever before, but also we've developed a new way of roasting called Radiant Roast. Now, this amazing process roasts each coffee bean evenly all the way through. So you get no weak coffee due to under-roasting and no bitter coffee due to parching. You'll find the new Maxwell House always full-bodied, always smooth and mellow. Now, that's why we want you to discover this delicious coffee goodness for yourself. Won't you try a pound of the new Maxwell House tomorrow? We think you'll say that now, more than ever, it's the coffee that's good to the last drop.
We forget swing for the moment to enjoy Meredith Wilson's concert hall. The concert hall presentation tonight is a popular song of the day that we feel may be beautiful enough to last for a long time. Peter DeRose's lovely melody, Deep Purple. Oh, that was really grand, Meredith.
Thanks, Bob.
In fact, I think it was even better than the Jitterbug Trio.
Oh, well. Do you think the Jitterbug is here to stay, Bob?
It all depends on how you look at it. In some ways, swing is as old as music. For instance, look how many swing hits or songs we all used to sing when we were kids. Now, if the class will come to order, I'll explain it to you. We've had our musical moments. We've even tried to sing songs. But we've never discussed the Jitterbug craze. So gather round me, my children, and let's see how many swing songs we can trace clear back to those old kindergarten days. First of all, I know that all you boys and girls are itching to hear some kindergarten swings from little Walter Pigeon.
In and out the window, go in and out the window, go in and out the window, if you don't want to use the door.
Okay, Walter, though your vocal cords do seem slightly loose, and now those golden pigtails, lovely, modest little Ginny Bruce.
Stop beating around the mulberry bush, the mulberry bush. The mulberry bush, stop beating around the mulberry bush, come out and say you love me.
Oh, Bob, my little girl can sing, though she's not very strong on looks.
All right, Daddy. A kindergarten tune from Baby Snook. Now, Skippy Hull, it's your turn, so please drop that percolator and sing a swing tune that you learned in your nursery alma mater.
Okay. Chopsticks, oh, chopsticks, there's nothing like chopsticks to help my romance along. Four hands start playing and two heads start playing, two hearts start singing a song.
You're next, Windy Morgan. Now, prod your memory up a bit and think back on a rondelay. Come on, step up and render it.
Rondelay, Windy, Morgan. Oh, yes. Tom, Tom, the piper's son, stole a pig and away he run. He gets sand nailed by the ton. Tom, Tom, the piper's son.
Now then, Dithy Wilson, sing a swing tune of the day that in your kindergarten room you started on its way.
Oh, where has my little dog gone? Doggy, doggy, where's my doggy? Doggy, don't leave me alone.
And now from the land of enchiladas, rolling down the Rio, a Spanish kindergarten song from Leo Keith Carrillo.
You bet you my life.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha, ya no puede caminar, porque le falta, porque no tiene marihuana que fumar.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha,
you see there's really nothing new.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha, so we say goodnight.
Sends the Maxwell House good news to press for tonight, ladies and gentlemen. But we'll be back with a new edition next week. And from here, it looks like a grand show. You'll all be glad to know that we'll have with us next week your favorite and ours too, Lionel Barrymore, in an important drama, The Voice of Bugle Ann. Also, the charming singing star of stage, screen, and radio, Kitty Carlisle, who was elected the best-dressed All-American girl of 1939 by the American Fashion Academy. Kitty will sing, of course, and so will Douglas MacPhail. In addition to these guests, we'll have the regular gang, Frank Morgan, Fanny Bryce, and Hanley Stafford, and Meredith Wilson. So, see you next Thursday, and in the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. And be sure to see MGM's thrilling drama, Society Lawyer. This is Bob Young, saying goodnight.
This is Warren Hull saying goodnight and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.